welcome to episode 146 of Speak Beastie for March 6th, 2022. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Marjolaine.
Wow, it's March.
We are in March.
I know. Three more episodes before the movie.
Whatever that means.
But, what was that, Jeff?
I said, beware the Ides of March, whatever that means. I've never known what that means, but people still say it.
You've never read Julius Caesar?
Of course I haven't read Julius Caesar. They asked us to read it when we were in high school. High school is someone telling you to go read Jane Austen and then you don't do it.
Oh, oops, I failed that assignment.
Yeah,
then.
I was going to say, one of us had a very different high school experience, the rest of us nerds.
I read, I would say, about 65, maybe 65% of the books I was assigned to read in high school, and there had to be something controversial about it for me to want to read it. Like, I read Slaughterhouse 5, no problem. I read Of Mice and Men, no problem. But when they gave us The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, nope, no way.
I'm sorry that the struggle of the working man is not controversial enough for you.
I was a 16-year-old boy in Indiana. What? You know what? Never mind.
You
this isn't
just
about that.
Define, I have to know, how does it feel to be the bad boy of the podcast?
Well, I don't think that's really fair, because I think I'm technically the only boy of the podcast, so do I have much competition?
I mean, no, but judging by the gasps that the rest of us let out when you said you didn't do the assigned reading in high school.
You know what? Ron Weasley didn't do the assigned reading half the time he was at Hogwarts, and he's got legions of fans all over the world.
Just because you're a bad boy doesn't mean you don't have fans. Girls love a bad boy.
You know what? If I have fans, it's news to me, and it's... Actually, you know what? It's... never mind. Again, won't go there.
Anyway.
We're here to do a thing. I don't know. It's very early in the morning.
We're on fire today, y'all. Hey, so, speaking of people who are on fire, let's give a shout out to our Speak Beastie Patreon supporter, Anne S. We could not do this show without you. Thank you so much for your support.
Yay.
Thank you, Anne. All right, we actually have a ton of news today, so let's just jump right on into the Phoenix Register. Hello, listeners. Future Amy here. As predicted, the curse has struck once again. After this episode was recorded, a trailer was released, and so were a bunch of character posters. For more on the trailer, see our bonus episode released this past Tuesday. For everything else, stay tuned.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So, over the past week or so, I'm not sure exactly when these went up, but it happened quietly. Secrets of Dumbledore costumes were put up at the Leavesden studio tour. Some pictures were posted by One Spell Away on Instagram, and you can see those on MuggleNet's website in their article. FantasticBeastsMovies.com also has some pictures showing details of the costumes. And these costumes are gorgeous. I love the details and the colors.
Me too. I kept scrolling through these pictures saying, I want that one and that one and that. Ooh, I want two of that one.
I know. Yeah. I've been wanting to cosplay Queenie since the first movie, and this might actually be the one that gets me to pull the trigger. Like, that, her outfit is so gorgeous. Love
it. Yeah, the red dress.
And have you ever been blonde before?
No, I have not. I've never dyed my hair.
That'd be fun to see.
I do
okay,
need
we
to
can't
get
see
a...
each other, but by show of hands, who wants to see Anne in blonde hair?
Well, I do need to get a blonde wig for my Elsa cosplay, so I can just reuse it for Queenie. Might be a bit long, but it'll be fine.
You can just pin it under with bobby pins.
Exactly.
So, just going through these costumes, I wanted to go through each character here. We have a costume for Newt, of course. And I love this color scheme. It's like this really cool shades of gold and like mustard yellow suit with a waistcoat with a green shirt underneath.
Yeah, I love it.
It's Indiana Jones vibes, which makes sense with the way they're going with this movie.
Yeah, it's more, the outfit for going in the jungle and So that's very, very nice. It's short vest and And the untied bow tie also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that fits.
I love the belt. I thought that was so cool. It's got like the double buckles. It's a really thick belt.
That is cool.
And I'm a sucker for a waistcoat.
Oh, yeah.
I love a nice waistcoat. And what's fun about Newt's costume is based on the description alone, you might think it doesn't quite go all of it together, but then you look at it and it really does, especially picturing it on Eddie would pull this off magnificently.
I mean, it's Eddie Redmayne, he can pull everything off.
Yeah, he's a fashion icon.
I mean, it's the colors in the bow tie and the pocket square that really just pull it together, you know.
And people don't appreciate pocket squares. They should.
Speaking of pockets, did you notice it has a Cornish pixie in the pocket? Does it mean that we will have Cornish pixies in the movie? Because we didn't have pixies in the last two movies, I think.
Right.
No, we sure didn't.
No, that's
That'd
true.
Be
we haven't had, though. The only time I can recall having Cornish pixies is in Chamber of Secrets. So that would make sense.
Like, I can't tell if this was just we should put a creature in his pocket and we don't have a bow truckle, so let's put a pixie thing for the exhibit, or if this...
Yeah, that's
you
that's
think
the
it wouldn't
studios
be that hard
who I think
they
have
truckle.
Everything at hand. They're in Livesden. They are literally where everything is.
Yeah, you'd think that if anybody would have a bow truckle just lying around waiting to be used.
You would think that.
Maybe supply chain issues. They had to give away all their bow truckles to that exhibit in Philadelphia. So they were just like, well, we couldn't. When we ordered on Amazon, it didn't come in time. So, Cornish pixie it is.
The little bendable one you can buy on Amazon. That's what they ordered.
What do you mean all the Hot Topics and you care out?
Oh my gosh. And then we also have the way these costumes are grouped together. I thought it was interesting. They paired up Albus Dumbledore and Galette Grindelwald off to the side. And also interesting, their costumes look kind of similar, really.
Mm-hmm.
Both have these gray suits. Grindelwald's is a little bit more tailored than Dumbledore's. Same with their coats. Dumbledore's is kind of like a little looser, where Grindelwald's is a bit more structured with like buttons on it and stuff.
It fits nicely with their personalities.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the ties. Like Dumbledore's tie is this green tie and it almost looks like it's wool. And then Grindelwald's is like a satin tie with embroidery on it with flowers.
Yeah, the floral tie is so surprising. It's like this bit of softness that you just wouldn't expect from him.
Yeah. But my favorite part of Dumbledore costume is the shoes.
Yes. I love those shoes.
Oh, those are fabulous shoes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that Dumbledore's got the hat, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The hat.
Is that the same hat from Crimes of Grindelwald that he was wearing?
Yes.
It looks like it, yeah. And then moving over to Queenie, the outfit that has Anne deciding to cosplay.
Oh, my heart goes pitter-patter. What a costume.
She has this reddish-brown coat, and it looks very, very similar to the Crimes of Grindelwald coat, but the colors are just a bit darker. and this red satin dress that is very queeny with like that tie at the neck and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those red suede shoes, which I'm pretty sure these are the same shoes she had in Crimes of Grindelwald as well.
The caption from FantasticBeastMovie.com says yes, that those are the same shoes.
Okay.
And apparently Dumbledore's are as well, so they're not sure they are in fact wearing the same shoes with these costumes, or if they didn't have the actual shoes yet, so they just recycled the ones from Crimes of Grindelwald.
I mean, it would make sense if they were to wear the same shoes.
Yeah.
Because, like, in real life, I mean, how many pairs of shoes do you really have? Like, you know, you wear the same thing mismatched with different outfits. But, yeah. I love this dress, though.
It is so pretty. Like, that, I cannot wait to see it on her. And it's not the dress. We see her wearing a black dress in the trailer, right? So.
Yeah.
Well, she's only in the trailer for that one moment.
That's true.
But surely that's not the costume she wears for the whole film.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the one that we see on the cover of the movie Magic.
That's true.
Book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also a nice necklace. I think that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Gold and red.
Yeah, it looks like the stone's carnelian, maybe? Like, it looks carnelian in some shots, but then in the close-up shot, it looks black, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
And then we have this mysterious gold gown that there's no nameplate, but the gold gown is, like, the centerpiece of this costume display. It's right in the middle. There's been some speculation that this could be for Santos, who is the Brazilian candidate for Supreme Mugwump. Which I know in our chats earlier, I was saying it kind of makes sense with the color scheme mm-hmm. because her campaign banners are also gold.
Yeah, and the style also with this detail on the top and the shoulders. I think it fits the style of the banner too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Maybe it's just all the Project Runway that I've watched over the years, but whenever you have all of these different kinds of pieces and then in the center you have the show-stopping gown, a lot of people, when they're designing collections for that sort of thing, this showstopper piece is usually meant to be some kind of wedding gown, so I'm not sure why, but for some reason I was trying to picture this as a wedding gown and I was thinking to myself, who would be likely to actually get married in this movie? I can only think of like two, but that doesn't mean that I'm right, because it could be somebody, by the end of it everybody could end up getting invited to a wedding for a character that we just met. So that still doesn't rule out Santos.
Yeah.
Yeah, this outfit most reminds me of this scene. We see that we will have a kind of fancy venue for dinner or political things happening.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's where I'm picturing this dress and potentially Santos wearing it, like everyone, like, yeah, the same scene where we will have Queenie in her black dress. Yeah, I think that's the cocktail dress for this type of event, yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And Santos makes more sense than, this is a little too bright for Tina, at least from what we've seen of her color scheme for the last couple of movies.
Yeah, what all these costumes have got me thinking is, with the release of the last two films, I have ended up going out and buying a fabulous new coat. I got Newt's coat for the first movie. I got Dumbledore's coat from the second movie. So there better be a coat. I know that it's coming out in April instead of November and coats aren't in season exactly. But you know what? I want a coat.
That has never stopped Hot Topic, I promise you.
No, and outerwear is my favorite, and I'm a sucker for a nice jacket or a nice coat, and I feel like after all the waiting that we've done for this movie, I deserve a coat.
Agreed.
I think that's fair.
Seems like a fair trade. 3 years of waiting for a coat.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some more news as well. Japan had another Secrets of Dumbledore event. They're doing a lot of events there for this, which is interesting.
Yeah, they're really pushing it over there. There's a Harry Potter cafe in Japan. They did the Christmas display. They're really pushing it for some reason over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where they're premiering it?
Yeah, but no, why are they premiering it there?
And they don't, because it's the same... I mean, we still don't know where the world premiere will be, but I'm guessing London, but I'm not sure.
Right.
But yeah, they have the same date in London and in Japan, in the UK and in Japan for the release. So, but in Germany is one day earlier, so maybe it would be in Germany, but yeah.
I mean, Germany would make sense for...
I'm expecting Germany too, but...
Since I did Paris for the last one.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, I think even them don't know yet, but it depends on the pandemic, you know, if they will be able to travel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
but
anyway.
Yeah, Japan is the only country where they did event with public for this movie. So
yeah. So at this event, David Heyman confirmed that a manticore and a wyvern will appear in this film. The wyvern is a type of dragon. So presumably that winged creature in the trailer that I was convinced was a Snallygaster.
Oh, interesting. Was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it's that because he's talking about this creature, like it's this creature that can inflate and you can be lifted by it to see from above. So yeah, it totally matches the what we see in the trailer.
Yeah, because in the trailer we see that creature kind of like puffs up, right?
Yeah, it does a little bit.
It's like chest expands. Yeah. Yeah, so Heyman also said that they have not yet started writing Fantastic Beasts 3, or Fantastic Beasts 4, sorry.
I would hope that they've written Fantastic Beasts 3.
They just improvised the whole thing. It was like a Christopher Guest movie. They were given an outline of a scene and then just go.
No, Fantastic Beasts 4, which has some people concerned.
Like me? Because I'm already really old and I don't want to die before the fifth movie comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, we already had David Yates talking about the fact that there will be a hiatus between movie 3 and 4 because he was able to do another movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, I'm not surprised, but yeah,
A lot of people were comparing this to the timeline of when we were told that the third film was written, which was like before Crimes of Grindelwald came out. But when you think about it, they had originally planned that release to be so much closer together.
Right.
So like Marjo just said, with knowing that they've already planned to have a little bit more time between these two films, it doesn't concern me as much that they haven't started writing it, especially when you kind of think... That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not plotted out. It's just not in script form.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they say that part of the delay for Fantastic Beasts 3, apart from obviously the pandemic, was because after the response to Crimes of Grindelwald, they decided to go back and make some changes to the script?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of script doctoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't stated that it was... a reaction to the reception of the last movie, but yeah, definitely they rewrote a lot. So
yeah.
Now, in the same event that David Heyman was at, he did say that if he has his way about it, then the next movie would take them to Japan. So maybe that has something to do with why they're pushing it so much over there, because they're trying to get everybody in Japan super hyped about being the location for the next one.
Yeah.
I feel like Potter and everything Wizarding World has always had a very large fan base in Japan anyway. Yeah. So it would really make sense for them to do that and, you know, give the Japanese fans something that happens in their country. You know, think about how excited we were about when it was in the U.S. in New York. Like, I feel like that would be a good move for them to do.
That's true. Like, the Wizarding World at Osaka was slammed.
Like, oh, yeah.
It was so, there were so many people there, and all of them were wearing their little Hogwarts robes. It was great.
Yeah, but with a plot going to be closer and closer to World War II, that's okay. That's interesting to go to Japan. It makes sense, but yeah, it's a tough setting to go to Japan during World War II, but that would be interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, and the news just keeps coming. We finally have a release date or an air date for Fantastic Beasts, a natural history documentary. In the UK, that will be February 27th on BBC and iPlayer. And in the US, that's April 1st on HBO Max.
So in France, we don't know.
Sorry, Marjo. So I guess I'm keeping my HBO Max subscription for another month since I got it just for the reunion.
Every time I think about canceling HBO Max, they keep putting something else up there, and I keep saying, okay, yep. I guess I'll stay just a little bit longer, and I've just, at this point, I've given up on canceling it.
That's their game plan!
It's working! All right, and then we also have Harry Potter the Exhibition that just opened at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. And there are a lot of Fantastic Beasts items and really cool themed parts of the experience. That includes Newt's case, Makusa, and I'm going to butcher the name of the French ministry, so I'm just going to call it the French ministry.
The Ministère des Affaires Magiques, of course.
There it is.
Thank Beautiful. You.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
And totally then translated how I was them into French. Pronounce yeah. that.
What, from what I've see from the picture, it's just a plate for the Ministère des Affaires Magiques. It's not the full set, but yeah. But actually, for the people who are in the common room, we had a lot of infos and pictures from our friend Laurie Kim, who was at the world opening for La Gazette du Sorcier, actually. So yeah, it was really, really exciting to have her report, and now to have in the common room all the... She described everything connected to Fantastic Beasts in our common room. So yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Her pictures were amazing. I hope it's touring, right? So I hope it makes its way to other places. Soon.
I cannot wait to go see this. I'm definitely going to go in the summer. I'm going to take a little trip
it
down.
Very interactive and very immersive. It looks really, really fun and very different from the last Harry Potter exhibition that was touring.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And finally, the cover of The Secrets of Dumbledore movie Magic book from Inside Editions has officially been released. But noticeably, they haven't put out the back cover yet, which is where the good stuff is. So if you want to know about that, we did cover that leaked image of the back of the book under a spoiler warning in episode 142.
Yeah.
Yep. I get why they're being so hardcore about releasing that back cover, because there is a lot of info on there. But come on, we're a month and a half out.
Yeah. But that's in this cover that we see the picture of Queenie with the red dress. So
yeah, it's true.
So that's it for the news, I think.
Yeah,
even if
we record quite early, so I'm guessing the time episode will come out, there will be more.
I'm sure there'll be more news. Yeah,
there's probably been more news that's come out since we've been sitting here.
Probably. Supposedly, there is supposed to be another trailer coming out, which, since we're recording on a Sunday, that will probably drop tomorrow on Monday. So stay tuned. Sorry that was omitted.
So it's time for the owl to come. And as we said, we are recording very early, so not a lot of owls were able to come in time for our recording. So no response from our last episode question, because we are actually recording quite at the time that the episode is released. So. But we saved a very large owl carrying a very large letter for us. And it was a very, very nice and long and interesting email from our friend Albert. And so it's so large that we will not be able to read all of it here. But he's talking about very interesting topics that may start a lot of discussion also between our listeners. So, we want to cover that. So Albert was talking about positivity in a wizarding world. And he said something very sweet about the fact that we as a community have the power to generate positivity, but also dispel it. So we need to be careful about the way that we approach the reception of a movie that is not even come out yet, and the importance of being open-minded to everything that will come to us, and the responsibility of being positive to keep this fandom more open to everything. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about the differences between what the fandom looks like now with what it looked like in the time when the Potter movies were coming out. So and so he asked some questions. So he said, do you sometimes struggle with keeping that pure, unrestrained and unjaded excitement for the Wizarding World nearby? Or can you dive right into that same sense of wonder as when you first entered this world? As easy as Newt diving into his, his suitcase and magical beast. I love the comparison. He's asking us, if we are able to be as excited as we were 20 years ago or 15 years ago. So I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
I find it quite easy.
Yeah, same. I think that I made the conscious decision to allow myself to be excited. And I think that's something that we all probably have had to do at some point, being fans. It's so very toxic on social media. I'm sure everyone's noticed, right? And I get it. Everyone's got to make their own decision as to how they want to consume Wizarding World content at this time. But I think what bothers me is when other people try and tell fans of the Wizarding World how to take that content and what they're allowed to be excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that so much with Cursed Child, right? And I wasn't a huge fan of Cursed Child, but I made sure that I wasn't out there saying, oh, anyone who is a fan of this is an idiot and, they're not a real Potter fan because they like Cursed Child. And that's the sort of thing that I feel like we deal with, is that weird, almost judgment of what you can and can't like, and just let people enjoy what they like, okay? That's all I have to say.
This is something that I've been, because it's not just the Potter fandom that is kind of nasty and toxic like that. It is literally every fandom. Kind of been pulling back from fandom in general, but the ones that I am involved in, all of them have that exact same judgmental, well, you can have this headcanon, but you can't have this headcanon. And of course, the headcanon that you can have is the one that affiliates with the ones that I have. And
which totally defeats the whole purpose of a headcanon.
Oh. And I just, this is where I'm going to sound like a fandom old, so I apologize in advance. But I think it's because of the loss of specialized, curated fandom spaces. We don't have LiveJournal anymore. We don't really have Tumblr anymore. We don't have, Dead Journal or Insane Journal or any of the other places where you could go. We don't have forums, really, anymore. Mm-hmm. The only places where you can explore and talk about fandom are going to be, in Facebook groups or Discord servers or Reddit or whatever. And you're not able to curate that experience the way you could. You can't just choose certain Reddit followers to see their posts. You can't just choose certain Discord users to only see their posts. So you can't really curate a fandom experience that is what you want to see anymore. And so as a result, people are being exposed to all sorts of different viewpoints. And then they're fighting each other because they don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I realize that I'm, I guess I stayed stuck in the past in the way that I'm interacting with fandoms, because I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Facebook just for a common room.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And I succeed to create my Facebook to have only thing that I are not, I mean, I don't read comments a lot. And even in YouTube, I'm very selective on what I look and what I read. So I hear about the toxicity of fandom, but I don't experience it every day. So it's easier to, but I realize when I love something that everyone around me has the toxicity because they are more involved in this, different media, social media. And so I feel like the responsibility to say things that I love, even if I'm the only one. And yeah, so I like you said, Amy, it's a choice to be positive about the things that you love and not being too affected by the toxicity that is trying to tell you that you are not, you are stupid to love what you love. And yeah, mm-hmm. But at the same time, I very appreciate the deep discussion that we can have now that we were not able to have 15 years ago. So that's two sides of the coins. I can now talk to much more diverse people about the things that I love. And it was not the case 15 years ago when I was a teenager. So it has this this downside, because of course, as soon as you open the discussion to everyone, that's also opening it to more toxic side of it, of discussion, but it's also very, so much rich that it was when the Potter movie came out. So, and I'm an adult now, so I can handle this discussion too. So yeah, but I'm really happy to not be a teenager these days, because it sounds tough.
Oh my God, like being a teenager,
it really does.
Just imagine all the dumb stuff that you did when you were a teenager would be documented.
Oh my gosh.
I, so like, had such a minimum presence on social media as a teenager, and thank God, because when I see some of the things that I posted, like, come up on my time hop and stuff, I'm like, ugh! I, like, track it down and delete that status. I'm like, go away.
Oh my God, nobody gets on my nerves more than the me that was posting Facebook statuses my freshman year of college when I thought I understood what it was to have problems, but I didn't.
Oh, that's cute.
Oof. Here's the thing about fandoms for me. Where fandoms go right is when they remind you of the joy of sharing this thing that you love with other people, because then it's not just about the thing that you like, it's about the community that comes with it. Like what we're sitting here doing right now. Where fandoms go wrong is when they make you feel like you have to take a step back, and I guess if I had to look at a positive side of that, it's that it reminds you that you don't need other people's opinions or approval to enjoy the stuff that you like. But it's really a shame when the community that you love sharing this thing with makes you feel like you don't really need to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, as for diving back into the joy of this Wizarding World content, I know that not everybody is a big fan of the Fantastic Beasts franchise in general, but personally, I loved it from when I found out what it was going to be, so I was determined to like it either way. Like, I my first appearance on the show, I talked about how other people don't really like Crimes of Grindelwald that much, it seems, but I'm willing to say that I do. Mm-hmm. And I still say that because I was determined to find things to enjoy about it. But then again, I'm a glass half full kind of person, and I understand not everybody is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say for me, it is, as far as like the world itself goes, I still love the Wizarding World itself, but that joy has been tempered. Like, last time we went to Universal Orlando was in 2019, before everything, all this happened. So that was before the author really set herself on fire. And now I really have, I'm struggling about, do I go back? I love the Wizarding World. The idea of never going back breaks my heart, but I don't buy official merch anymore. It's tough, is my point. And so it's hard. I still love the Wizarding World. But it's tempered now. It can't be the same way it was when I was 16, because I'm not 16 anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's true that we need to be very careful as a fandom to not drown ourselves in toxicity, because it does more hurt than it does good to the world to only feed the toxicity. And I think it's a good thing to to be determined to like what we like, and even if it means debate about the things that should be debated. But we can't have a debate if everyone is on the toxic side or on the negative side. We only have a debate if we have both sides represented. So
yeah, it's really the difference between engaging with a fandom in a I'm gonna love everything that's put out versus engaging with a fandom in a critical but still loving way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it was just one of the great points that Albert bring to the discussion, and there are many others, and we will just quote it two other questions that could I think could be main discussion topics, but we want to bring them now so people can start discussion on our common room, in our comments on the social media, and but we will definitely go back to this topic later. So he's asking, are there any inspiring examples of positivity in the wizarding community you've witnessed and have a story about? So that is definitely something that we want the listener to talk about, because that's the type of thing that we want, but we definitely have. So, yeah. And the other thing is very interesting. He said, do you think that if the Fantasy Beasts would have started in 2001 as they are, would they have been as cherished and welcome and as beloved as the Potter films? How much does that nostalgia have to do with the fact that we simply didn't have a fraction of the internet awfulness as we do now? Or is it only the formal qualities of the art itself that determines what films are celebrated in New Year's specials and what films are passively excessively lambasted? So yeah, this context of two different time, 20 years apart is a very great topic of discussion, but it deserves a more full more time to cover. So yeah, but good thing to think about. So thank you, Albert.
Again. Yeah, Albert, thank you for that wonderful email. Be sure to check out Albert's own podcast, The Wizarding World Podcast. I'm sure it's available on podcatchers, wherever those can be found. So now we're going to move on to our main discussion, which is signs and texts in the trailer. And this is going to be a long one, folks. So apologies in advance. So we start off.
We have a lot of notes.
There are a lot of notes. At one point,
I know
my husband
make this
came
reference
into our
constantly,
room.
But when I saw signs and texts, I immediately heard Joe from a Harry Potter sequel in my head saying, "Did you get my text?" But I feel like I'm never not hearing that though.
You didn't text me back.
Just plays on a loop. Welcome to my brain. It plays on an endless loop. Did you get my texts? Because you didn't text me back.
Well, every time I say the word, actually, I don't think I say the word text again. But if I ever do say text, please feel free to go text after I say it.
Did anybody ever actually have that experience? I seem to remember it happening to other people, but I don't remember it happening to me, where someone would text you or you would text someone and then you would have to actually go to them and say, "Did you get my text?"
So if you ever look at,
see if they'd read it,
the text log between me and my husband, I look like a crazy stalker, because I will text him because I'm at work and I can't call, and then he'll call me back. So our text chain is just me texting him random questions, and he never texts back.
And he calls you to actually answer you with speech.
Yes. So I do have that. I'm like, "Hey, did you get my text?" And he's like, "Yeah." That's why I'm calling
you. I don't know
you.
Your husband, really, but somehow this makes sense. I believe this.
Right. So moving on. 17 seconds in the trailer, when Dumbledore is walking down the street in what we believe to be New York. There are a lot of signs in this one, but there are only two are legible. Janik and Pulowski Company, Taylor's, and a sign that says drugs-soda.
Love the drugs-soda sign. My favorite one in the whole trailer.
Right? Iconic.
Great sign. I'm a fan. I want it on a t-shirt.
Because those are the two things that you need to survive, drugs and soda.
Yeah. Janik and Pulowski apparently appeared in the first Fantastic Beasts film and is located on Rivington Street, which is also where Jacob's apartment and bakery are located.
Ooh.
And thank you to the Harry Potter Wiki for doing that bit of detective work that I had no idea. I guess I need to rewatch the first Fantastic Beasts movie and keep an eye out for that tailor shop. Rivington Street is a real street in New York City. It's in the Lower East Side between Pitt Street and the Bowery. It was a largely Italian and Jewish neighborhood in the early 20th century. And it is about two blocks away from the Tenement Museum on Orchard, which was used for the exteriors of Jacob's apartment. So what is at the Tenement Museum now certainly could have been over on Rivington Street during that time period. Now it's mostly restaurants.
Okay, yeah. So it's happening. Albus and Jacob's day in New York City. Albus is clearly going to pick up Jacob at the bakery. They're going to go to the Statue of Liberty next.
They're going to go to the M&M store.
Yeah, the M&M store.
They're going to take selfies in Times Square.
Yes. Oh, I love that for them.
I really want that now. I just tried to think about what is going to happen outside of my sparkly headcanon. I'm thinking, I figured that when time has passed, Kowalski's doing his bakery thing, he's gonna, I picture it like this, and I know this is gonna be heartbreaking and yet also kind of touching, is that he's gonna be behind his counter and every time the bell rings, he's gonna look up with excitement and then disappointment because he's gonna hope that the next time the bell rings, it's gonna be Queenie.
No!
Yes! We need to be reminded of the heartbreak so that when they finally get back together, which is going to happen, it's that much more satisfying. It's good storytelling.
And that's actually what we see in the trailer with this fantasy shot of Queenie in the bakery with Jacob.
Yeah.
But I figure Newt is probably going to pick up Kowalski and be like, hey, so Dumbledore sent us a text. I don't know if you saw it, but we kind of need to report back to base, like, now. And Kowalski's like, oh, I don't know, Newt. I don't know if I can. But then Newt just kind of grabs his arm and apparates him. It's like, oh, look, we're here.
Hmm. So I don't know if we will see Newt in New York, but we see a shot of Eulalie at 51 seconds in what looks like exactly the same street in New York. So yeah, what I'm guessing is Dumbledore is here to meet Eulalie, but since it's so close from where Jacob is supposed to live, I don't know if, Dumbledore went to see Eulalie and for, I don't know, Jacob is just hanging there and, oh, I noticed Muggle.
Oh, no. Okay, new headcanon. He goes to meet up with Eulalie. They're going to report back to base so that they can talk about the grand plan with the giant spinny prayer wheel and all that. And she says, oh, hang on, I'm just going to pop in here and pick up something from the bakery. It's a person.
It just seems so weird to me that they would be meeting on the same street where Jacob's bakery is if they're not going to see Jacob. But then I'm like, why would they? It doesn't make sense.
Well, why are they going to New York at all if they're not picking up Jacob? Like, Eulalie lives in Connecticut or Massachusetts?
I don't remember where Massachusetts is. Yeah.
It's in Massachusetts, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, then why isn't... it's not like it's more convenient for Dumbledore to apparate to New York versus apparating to Massachusetts.
And Eulalie is doing magic in a Muggle street, which is strange in New York, but that's... Yeah. I don't know what's happening here, but... For the pieces of the set, I think it's more recycling... reason from
probably
but yeah, if it's really where Jacob lives, I don't know.
They were probably just like, we need a New York City street. Oh, hey, we have this one. No one's gonna notice this.
Surely no one will.
And then we're digging in and zooming in on signs and like, oh my gosh, that Taylor is two doors down from Kowalski's bakery.
And you know that, like, as soon as that entry went up on the Harry Potter Wiki, some set decorator at where was it called? God bless it. Nerds.
These freaks.
Moving on to 12 seconds later at the ICW gathering at 29 seconds, we have banners for Vincenzo Santos, Grindelwald, and Lu Tao. Santos's banner is yellow with a portrait of her in an Art Nouveau style frame that says Supreme Chief of the International Confederation of Wizards in Portuguese. And Jeff, you got an interesting point here.
Yeah, it's Supreme Chief of the International Confederation of Wizards. And I feel like the term was mugwump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Supreme
mm-hmm.
mugwump. Doesn't that feel like one of the, and didn't we, I can't remember, in a previous episode, did we talk about how mugwump is an actual word?
Yeah. Like, yeah,
okay, see, that's where I was confused, because once again, I was thinking that mugwump was one of these made up wizarding words, and if it was, then it should be one of those things that is just kind of a universally accepted term within the wizarding world, and they just kind of say it in all different languages.
Mm-hmm. Like muggle should be, but apparently it's not.
No.
it makes sense if it's like muggle, it makes sense that different languages have different version of the title, I guess, because yeah, like I said, in French it's Grand Manitou, it's Manitou Supreme, not Mugwump. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know, but I'm not sure they will use Mugwump in the
Is
movie.
Is there something
actually
weird about Supreme Chief too? Like something about that title just for some reason it sounds slightly off.
Yeah, I know, like in other references they just called it the head of the
head,
International
yeah.
Confederation of
yeah
Wizards.
Yeah, and chief is literally head, so
mm-hmm.
I think in the movie they will say head of the Confederation. I don't think they will use mugwump, but we'll see.
Yeah, I wonder if they won't use mugwump because that is a Native American word.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and
so is chief,
looping
just
back
like it.
To what we were saying about positivity and stuff, but there was a lot of blowback about the way that the official information about Native Americans came out, Native American magic came out from Pottermore, so it's possible mm-hmm. that they're staying away from that.
Yeah, could be.
Where was I? Tau, yeah, so Lu Tau. Tau's banner has a red body and white outline with some kind of logo at the bottom and a woodcut-style portrait of him at the top. The words are in Chinese, and if you look on the Harry Potter wiki, someone transcribed the Chinese characters, which is incredible, thank you. And they translate to firmly support Lu Tao's election as president of the International Magic Association.
So now it's president.
Yeah.
Well, these are all translations, though.
Yeah, it's translations.
Yeah, this is literally just me running it through Google Translate, so it's possible that in-universe it'll make a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, this to me feels like it's very dry, very to the point, very more like a conservative type of statement. But then again, this is a political election that's at the heart of the main action of the story. So maybe this is Lu Tao is more the conservative type of candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm picturing. I think Santos would be the progressive one, the very open to the future one, mm-hmm. and we will have maybe Tao be the more conservative, more traditional, and of course Grindelwald be the fascist. So
Grindelwald will be the more, could we say, libertarian?
No, we can say fascist, I think.
No,
he himself is a fascist, but he's not pushing fascism, or at least that's not how he's trying to make it look. He's trying to make it look like the power will be to the people, but only his people.
I mean, at this time, fascist was not a bad word to push. I mean, the political people of this time who had this type of speeches that Grindelwald are definitely defining themselves as fascists. So I think that's definitely what he is. But yeah.
Well, speaking of Grindelwald, his poster is actually really interesting, just because if he running as a fascist candidate, his banner is only partially visible, but it has a grayscale painting of him in kind of a graphic design art deco style. And what looks like the ICW, the International Confederation of Logo of Wizards, in the corner. And what's interesting is that the fascist movement in the 30s was not into that kind of graphic design, that kind of art deco look. So they were much more into, like, a more realistic, this is the way things used to be, apple-cheeked blonde guy kind of look. So the fact that Grindelwald is then going with this kind of art deco design is really weird and really interesting.
That's why I'm not sure it's... Are you sure it's Grindelwald's
banner? I am not, but I couldn't figure out what else it would be.
I mean, because the logo that on the corner... So if it's the ICW one... At first I thought it was Grindelwald.
I thought it was, too.
It looks quite similar, but you're right. It's more a W than a double G. But if it's the ICW, and it doesn't match the color, because we see later that Grindelwald might have green color for the banner. And so I think it might be the banner of the current Supreme Mongwomp.
That would also make sense.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know why they will have the ICW logo on a candidate and not on the other one. But...
Or maybe it's just like a general, like, hey, the election's happening banner. Like, not really for a candidate, but more like...
Has a face on it, so I don't know, but yeah.
Like, it made sense to me that this would be Grindelwald's banner, just because I thought it's the least flashy of the three, but then again, he doesn't really need the flashiest banner because of the three, even though he's the one with probably the least amount of experience in politics, he has the biggest reputation, so he literally just has to put his name out there and get people thinking about it. He doesn't have to... you know, make it seem like he's got the message, because people who have heard of him have no doubt heard what his message is, even if they don't know everything about what he stands for.
The thing that was the most interesting to me about this scene was when I was staring at this screenshot and it's like zooming in, there looks like there's wanted posters on the pillars or arches towards the bottom and back. I can't make anything clear on them, but the way they're formatted, which is dark on top, white on bottom, it's the same kind of formatting as Sirius's wanted poster from Prisoner of Azkaban. And they do appear to have a graphic at the top, and they all appear to be a little bit different, which makes sense if the wanted poster is moving.
Yeah, I didn't notice these until you pointed that out.
Same. And when I'm looking back at it, wow, you really zoom at a pixel.
I know!
It doesn't look anything for me to me.
I was wondering.
No, you may be right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering if these could be of Grindelwald. I mean, we know he like is technically wanted. I mean, that's pretty brazen to be like openly campaigning like in this room where there's wanted posters of you hanging on the walls. But I mean,
that's a chutzpah. Yeah.
I can see Grindelwald do that.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is that based on some information that we revealed in episode 142 that I'm not going to get into much more detail about due to the fact this way.
Oh, yeah!
It could be for somebody else that's not Grindelwald.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, maybe.
So, hard to say. All right, so
do
moving on.
Do we need
on.
This many candidates, really? I mean, I know this election is obviously very important, but it's supposed to be Secrets of Dumbledore.
What, you mean the subtitle isn't Secrets of Santos, Lutau, and also Grindelwald?
No, it's just say it's not Secrets of Dumbledore presented by C-SPAN.
But wouldn't it be great if it was? All right, so moving on. We are heading to Berlin at 39 seconds in. The signs that we see in this scene are for Viandern, Alstein and Bullock, Christoph's Lichtspiel and Apotheke, Bergstadtbrau, Hildelux, and Hotel Muggelberg. So sorry about that. I can't help myself. And I will link this in the show notes, and I'm saying that so I remember to do this when I am writing the show notes. There is a German Twitter user at max_kirchy_fca who did a really great sign-by-sign breakdown of the Berlin shot, suggesting what each store could be. And that's where a lot of this information is pulled from. So he says that Viandern is a gold shop, and it definitely looks like some kind of retail. Couldn't find anything to match the name. There is a Castle Vianden in Luxembourg. And when I just popped Viandern into Google Translate to see if it came up with anything in English, it auto-detected it as French and said it meant meet RN.
Yeah.
So there's that, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, it can, but
I was looking at this doc, and before I realized that the next several pages were a breakdown of what all of these signs were, I was translating the ones that could be translated based on what I remember from when I actually studied some German. And I remember anderen is the others. So oh. I thought, okay, what can I make out of that? And then I scrolled down a bit further, said, oh, nope, it's a gold shop. It's a cash for gold place. Wizards invented it. There you go.
The next door is Alstein and Book, which appears to be some sort of retail shop. Can't really tell what it is. What the author of the tweet suggested that was that really sent me down a rabbit hole was that Jacob Alstein was a German physicist and alchemist in the 1600s. As we know, he is an alchemist and therefore immortal. So maybe we meet him.
Yeah, and Alstein, the Stein part means stone, so...
Oh! Hmm.
And Al, I don't know, but, yeah.
And they also suggested that Bullock was a reference to Sandra Bullock, because her mother is a German opera singer.
Oh, boy.
Why not? Let's take it. Christoph's looks like a restaurant. I'm guessing, this is just... total speculation. I think it belongs to an ice harvester who then went into the restaurant business with his reindeer.
This is the part of the show where Anne projects her love of Frozen on everybody.
How dare you make that suggestion? What an imprecation on my character.
I'm not suggesting it. I'm stating it outright. That's what you're doing.
The Lichtspiel. That's short for Lichtspielhaus, which translates to light playhouse, which is an obsolete word for a movie theater. The Apotheke. Is an apothecary or pharmacy. I'm sorry, I interrupted someone. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying cool.
Yeah, no, I thought that was if you Google Lichtspiel now, there's actually multiple like artsy movie theaters in Germany that now have the name Lichtspiel, which is very cool.
Lichtspiel.
The Burgstadt Brau is, I'm guessing, some kind of beer hall because Brau means beer. And
Brau means brew. Beer means beer.
Okay.
I don't want Sophie getting too mad at you.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Oh, Sophie's going to, like, go
oh, no,
off
I there's going to be some comment.
I can't wait. Just unleash her wrath on Anne.
Bergstadt, wow.
Suddenly I see why y'all had me do this. Thanks.
Yep.
So there are two towns. There's one in Saxony and one in Bavaria that are both called Bergstadt, and... one has an umlaut over the A and one has an umlaut over the U.
Burgstadt and Burgstadt.
Yep. Yes.
Sure, thank you.
That was perfect.
So,
I studied German too.
I'm thinking it's the second one because it's a larger town and there's a history of winemaking, but who knows? The Hildelux is a big curved building with its name in really big lights along the top. No idea. Hilda didn't come up with anything. Lux means light in Latin. So I'm thinking maybe it's another theater, maybe a regular theater or another kind of cinema. We don't know.
Sure, why not?
And then the last one, I had to double check with Marjolaine about this because she has a German version of POA, so I wanted to double check. There's a Hotel Mugelberg.
Yeah, I checked with Sophie because it was more more easy to than to check in my book. Mm-hmm. Mugelberge.
So this is likely a reference to the Mugelberger Hills just outside of Berlin. But Mugel is also the German word for muggle, according to Sophie and Marjolaine. So I doubt there's any connection, but if there isn't, it's a wild coincidence. And then Berge means hill or mountain in German, so it could potentially translate to Muggle Hill.
What does Moogle sound like? Something that Dr. Seuss was going to write a book about, but decided not to.
Does have that vibe. Moving Moogle. On 5 seconds further, we are at the ICW gathering in presumably Bhutan at 44 seconds. There are three banners ahead of Newt, yellow, red, and green, which are probably representative of Santos, Lou, and Grindelwald. And the guy next to Newt has a Santos banner that I don't think this would count as a spoiler because you can kind of read the text. I just used the back of the leaked back of Movie Magic to confirm. But it, in case it is count as a spoiler, it basically does just say her name and her motto. Yeah. So
it's interesting that this is the only motto I think we see where instead of a complete sentence, like a mission statement, it's just a bunch of words.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do this kind of thing before.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership. Progress. Magic. Just in case you forgot that this is a movie about that.
In case you forgot this wasn't a political thriller.
Yeah.
So then at 47 seconds, we see Bunty standing in front of a store that says Otto Edward Lederwear? Lederwear?
Lederwear.
Lederwear.
So that's that's a leather goods shop. And perhaps somewhere she's leaving after buying several identical leather cases?
Oh, I wonder why.
Like, we only see her carrying one, but she's a magical person. She could have just shrunk the others and popped them in there. We don't know.
Or maybe they're like Russian nesting suitcases.
Cute. I love that.
Traveling has never been so simple.
I find it interesting that she's in Berlin.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's interesting that she's actually like going like out places and like traveling instead of just staying.
Yeah, that's in good. London. Good for her. She's part of the team now.
Yay. We don't see her in the train, right?
She is not on the train.
No.
And that's the train that is supposed to bring them to Berlin, so.
That doesn't mean she's not on the train. It just means that during that blip from the trailer, we don't see her.
That's like, true.
She could she could be in the she could be in the dining car or something.
Or in the suitcase.
Yeah.
She has a suit in the suitcase. She's taking care of the
Has anybody seen Bunty? And then the suitcase just starts rattling and then... Oh, she's here. She was in the fifth one.
I'm going to skip my Otto Edwards in history because we're already running long and they're not relevant. Moving on to 48 seconds. We are heading to the rally, presumably. So we have Santos banners, handheld Santos signs, handheld maybe Grindelwald signs. And then there's a Kirin poster. The handheld signs say Vote Vincencia Santos and have the same color scheme and Art Nouveau border with a medallion on the top that looks like a globe with a sunburst around it. There's also a guy with a red and white striped flag, which the stripe placement is similar to the U.S. flag, but without the blue star field. It is the right color scheme for Lou, but the flag is kind of behind him, so we can't really see any of it. So it's impossible to say what it actually is. Some people also have diamond-shaped signs that look similar to what I thought was the cut-off Grindelwald banner from earlier, but the guy in the image does not look like Grindelwald. He looks older and may also be wearing glasses. So maybe that is the current head of the ICW, and they're just like, we like this guy!
Yeah, I was really confused when you... what is she talking about? And I went back and I can see this face, but... Yeah, I don't know. It can be Grindelwald. I'm not sure it's not him, but again, that's...
Well,
this other actor who plays the actual head of the ICW looks quite similar to Mads Mikkelsen, so...
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
And then this was another thing where I'm just, like, zooming in, just... Because these... When I zoomed back out to look at the full picture, the banners that I'm going to talk about here, you can... barely see them. I was zoomed in at like 1600%. But there are some guys in the back that have yellow banners with a black shape on them, and the way the banners are cut makes them look like flames. So at this point, at like hour five into going over the same screenshots 7,000 times, I was like, oh, they're supporting a phoenix. This is the phoenix. They want Kratos to be president. And then on the far right is a dark blue and gold poster that only legibly says Kirin. And I think there's a little picture of it on there. So maybe it's an announcement of its birth or the part it plays or something. Or maybe there's a movie coming out called Kirin. We don't know.
Yeah, I'm more and more convinced that the reason why the candidates are gathering in this Himalayan village is the Kirin and something... connected to it. And I don't know, it's the fact that I think even in the we have several banner in this shot that look similar and we only see clearly this one on the front, but the fact that in this village the killing image, and it also is in the prayer wheel, it's the same design on the prayer wheel that they we can guess that they used to go there. So that's, yeah, the killing is connected to this place.
Definitely.
Yeah. Reason.
And I think it's not the fact that it's in a banner and all the other banner of the candidates, that must, it must be a link between the candidates and the killing.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we're skipping ahead to 127 in the trailer. Newt is, when this is in the scene where they're in the Great Hall, I think, and Dumbledore is creating something with his wand. Newt is holding a newspaper that you can clearly, that says, you can see M-U-R-D, and then on the next line, M-U-G. Presuming it's the Daily Prophet because it's Hogwarts, and I don't think he would have access to New York Ghost. If, and even if Eulalie had brought her bro Newt a copy of the New York Ghost, it would say, no, that's not Muggle. And it, probably more Muggles getting murdered, so that's fun and cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just for kicks and giggles, because I hadn't spent enough time driving myself insane doing this, I also watched the teaser to see if there's anything in there. Luckily for me, the only thing that was in there was the scene where Dumbledore and Credence are fighting in Berlin. They pass by another movie theater that says it's the Rex Lux. And there are banners below that read Toggle, T-A-G-L, and Kino, which means daily and cinema. So it's just it's another movie theater. And again, it's possibly because I had just been doing this for a long time at this point, and my brain was slowly melting out of my ears due to just having 10,000 tabs open. And I'm frantically trying to figure out what every single sign means. It's probably just indicative of the fact that we're in the Weimar Republic. This is a time of great art. There's a lot of movie theaters. There's a lot of movies happening. So flashy, so neon, so 30s. But it felt significant to me that there are so many movie theaters so big in the background. Like, this is very prominent in the background of the shot. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like you're right. I feel like it's just a way to really get it across what the time period is.
Yeah. So, that is my... Thank you for coming to my TED Talk about signs. I hope you all enjoyed it.
It was very thorough.
Just circling back for a minute to the Daily Prophet that says, supposedly suggesting that Grindelwald is murdering Muggles again, just making sure that I remember right. Isn't it true that Grindelwald was never popular and, like, he never had power in Britain? Isn't that what they said?
Yes. And I'm not saying it's necessarily, I'm presuming it's Grindelwald because he seems to be the number one Muggle murderer, but it certainly could be something else, someone else.
Who else would be murdering Muggles enough to get mentioned in a newspaper?
I don't know, maybe they died in a particularly magical way and the Daily Prophet was like, we know it was one of y'all who did this.
Credence? Maybe he exploded again?
Oh, so it's not, so it's more like... Oh, that's actually a nice suggestion. What if, well, not a nice suggestion, but an interesting one.
Yeah, no, it's not necessarily...
Don't trick brainwashed children into murdering Muggles. That's bad. But what if that's what Credence is out there doing for a lot of the movie? What if he's out there doing murders because Grindelwald is telling him to?
Ooh.
Oh, that would be kind of heartbreaking. And yet at the same time, doesn't it make sense?
Yeah, totally, because that's how Grindelwald sees Credence. It's a weapon, so...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I said that on my first episode here, too. I think I said that he wants this kid so that he can turn him into a nuclear bomb and unleash him on the Muggles.
Yeah.
And everybody who opposes him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the first reason is to defeat Dumbledore, because he knows that he can't do it himself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can definitely use it to other destroying purpose. So, yeah.
Jeff, I think you've got a look into the Newt case for us.
Yeah, I had to look very, very carefully into the Newt case for this one, and I think it will become abundantly clear in a moment why I had to proceed with caution. But I do have one that I thought we should talk about today.
Yeah!
So since we mentioned in the Phoenix Register that David Heyman has now confirmed that we are going to get a Manticore in Secrets of Dumbledore, I thought we should talk a little bit about the Manticore and why it is what I like to think of as the nope monster. It is just, the more I find out about this thing, the more I just think, okay, this creature did not come from nowhere, and yet I can't help feeling that it was a person who was responsible for the fact that this creature exists now, and I just wonder, what were you thinking? Like, whoever it was that started this whole mess was probably a very Hagrid-esque person. They were just having some fun, you know? Yeah, and you know what? Let's just get right into it. Let's just talk right about why this thing is a nope monster. So, the Manticore has a Ministry of Magic classification of 5X. And bear in mind, Newt Scamander himself does not agree with the Ministry classification system, but in this case, I think they're spot on. Because a 5X means it is a known wizard killer, impossible to train or domesticate, and according to the published version that I still have from years and years ago, they wrote in parentheses, or anything Hagrid likes.
Yeah, that's Harry's or Ron's note.
Yeah, Hagrid actually has quite a... He does tend to like the 5X creatures, but he has a particularly strong connection to this one, which we'll see in a moment. The part that... This part actually confused me a little bit, is because in the book, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, it says that it originated in Greece, but when I looked it up, apparently... See, that's why, is because apparently it came from Persian mythology and then worked its way into Greek and medieval European legends.
Yeah, I looked it up because, yeah, I was sure it was more Eastern than Greece. And yeah, and it connected to Greece because it was a Greek, I don't know, physician who worked for a Persian king that first described this manticore and bring it to the Greek culture, and then it was translated. And but it's very prominent in the medieval bestiary. It was known as a creature from the Far East, and they use it as a illustration in a lot of medieval art. So,
It's interesting how stuff like that happens, especially with mythological and magical creatures, because I remember in Prisoner of Azkaban when Snape was just raking Lupin's teaching stoil over the coals in front of his class, he disagreed and said that the kappa was more commonly found in Mongolia, but I think that was originally meant to be Japan. Unless I'm thinking of a different creature.
Yeah.
Stuff like that probably happens all the time with these creatures.
Yeah. But the name Manticore came from ancient Persian, and it literally means man-eater. So,
whoa, here they come.
Yep, that's a nope. Man-eater.
Even has a theme song.
That just plays as it enters the film.
So not this. Now, I'm going to be, just based on the little bit of this manticore we get to see in the trailer for Secrets of Dumbledore, I'm going to be curious to see how this head looks when you finally get a look at it, because I've seen illustrations of the creature and it kind of makes sense in illustrations, but I have no idea how they're going to pull this off, because it has the head of a man, the body of a lion, and the tail of a scorpion.
Yeah, and actually what David Heyman said, was talking about, he was talking of baby manticores, referencing the little crab-like creature that we see dancing, in quotes, with Newt.
Swiveling.
Swiveling. And so if that's baby's manticore, it doesn't look anything like it's supposed to look like. It's just scorpion-like with, I don't know, maybe a funny head. When you look closer, it's have a round head, so maybe when you grow up, the head turns into a weird human-like thing, but it doesn't have at all a body of a lion.
So maybe that's what happens when manticores reach manticore puberty. One day they're sitting there, these little scorpion-like creatures, and then the next thing you know, with little people heads.
Well, we do see a bigger one, right? When they're like...
Just the tail.
That would be the nope monster. Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know.
They already have this a scorpion tail when they are baby, and the big one we see has larger scorpion
big scorpion tail.
Yeah.
I'm zoomed in on a screen grab of the little guys right now, and their faces do look kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to tell, but they look kind of...
A round face, and the scorpion doesn't have a round face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, when they were working on this, they decided that a design with, like, an actual child's head on it would be too distracting or too weird.
Yeah.
Or too hard to animate.
To see when we have the art book from the movie, we have all the concept artist creation, and I can't wait to see the mental.
This looks like a Cabbage Patch Kid head.
Because if you remember the thing for the demi guys, or I don't remember other ones, but the demi guys was striking because they they tried some very different direction, and some of them were pretty scary.
What gets me is that if they're supposed to have the body of a lion, they have all these, like, multiple scorpion legs. Why wouldn't they have just done four legs and then had the scorpion, like, tail and pincher things?
I don't know.
Maybe, because I think the big one has, what we see, it's three tails.
Yeah.
So maybe two of the legs turn into tails.
Oh, God.
This is or just fascinating, is it maybe,
growth pattern.
Or maybe is it like a single mother's club of female manticores? Like, the reason we see three scorpion tails is because the squad is about to protect the babies.
Huh. So do you think there is three mama manticore?
It would not surprise me.
That is,
like,
a lot
of babies.
Maybe
they're arranging their carpool for manticore soccer.
There is a lot of babies, so I can, yeah.
They're definitely in a soccer league together. Yeah. They're not good at kicking the ball yet because their legs are so tiny. But
oh, they're so little.
They're little babies. So, moving on. So, the manticore is considered sentient and capable of human speech. And anytime we have a creature like this, like the Sphinx or the Centaurs, where they're considered magical creatures, but they can speak and they can communicate with humans, I just kind of wonder, where did they learn... Like the ability to form speech, okay, but where did they learn to talk?
Newt.
Like, to communicate.
We actually see Newt teaching them how to talk here.
I don't know. But in some, I can see some myth telling that actually it's the manticore that created languages and it's the human learning from the manticore, but no, it's just head canon mythology. It's not real, but I can see some, like, the Sphinx or something like that being the other way around. It's the human who learned speech from beasts. But
that's a fun head canon. I endorse that.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm
sure it exists in certain mythology, but I can't name one, but quote one, but yeah.
Probably. Just as a quick note, it croons softly as it devours its prey, so ew.
That's gross.
Cute.
Ew. I hate people that make noises when they chew. I don't hate them, I just wish they wouldn't do it. Now, this, I was wondering, this part about, it has an extremely tough skin that repels almost all known charms, but it's possible that defensive charms such as Protego can still be effective because they can protect you from the manticore. It's just that the magic that you would use on the manticore wouldn't be that protective. And I wonder, they make protective gear out of dragon hide. Do you think that they make protective gear out of manticore skin?
Maybe.
Maybe
the manticore
they sell
is
it
even
at that
harder
shop.
Sorry.
Yeah.
See, that would be the only thing, is that manticores are apparently incredibly rare, whereas as long as they're bred and kept under very careful conditions, it's probably easier for people in the wizarding world to come across a dragon than a manticore.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking, in order to get find a dead dragon to make dragon skin goods out of, you just have to go to a dragon sanctuary and you can retrieve it safely. Whereas if you want manticore skin, you probably have to go into a manticore lair where there are probably still alive manticores.
Mm. And that giant sting we were talking about earlier causes instant death, so obviously a very powerful venom. Would you consider that a defensive mechanism, or is that a predatory thing, having a sting with powerful venom?
Both.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't think there's much that's going to intimidate a manticore based on its size and what it's able to do, but I kind of wonder how much does it have to actually defend itself, or does it go out and actually go after the other creatures with the venomous tail?
I would expect probably more the second.
Yeah, but if we see a mana manticore and baby manticores, maybe she's using this weapon to protect the babies, so it can be also protective for little manticores. I don't know. but I wonder if the baby manticores already have this poisonous weapon, or if it's just a little sting that can hurt you but not kill you.
Like, you'd swell up a little bit, but they don't become particularly venomous until they reach adulthood.
Yeah.
I wonder, yeah. Because if they are already highly venomous, the fact that the two brothers are swiveling in the middle of it, it's more scary than I thought.
Yeah. Well, and also, if they are venomous enough to kill a person when they're babies, they're also venomous enough to kill each other when they're babies. So it does make sense that they would be, their bodies would not produce enough venom to do insta death until they're old enough to know how to use the tail.
Fair. Somebody who has a better, if anybody out there listening who has a more expansive knowledge of how venomous creatures get from when they're babies compared to when they're adults, if you want to weigh in here, we would love that. Because we are not biologists.
Clearly.
Yeah, please, scorpion expert, come in to the show to explain it to us.
Speakbeastie@gmail.com, send us an email.
Now, we don't see an actual manticore in the canon books, that not the Harry Potter novels, but what we find out in Goblet of Fire is that Hagrid creates the blast-ended scroots that form the basis of most of his Care of Magical Creatures lessons that year from crossbreeding a manticore and a fire crab. And Marjolin, I know you asked, yes, I'm sorry, I want to know. Like, I don't need a visual, I just need, like, basic mechanics. How do you get the material? First of all, how do these things breed in the first place? Like, if you got all these little tiny baby manticores running around, it makes sense to me that even though lions don't lay eggs, but I think scorpions do, don't they?
I think
yes.
So,
yes.
So, okay, so it makes sense to me that a manticore might lay eggs, but how do you crossbreed a manticore and a fire crab? Because I don't think you're going to get a manticore and a fire crab in the same place, and you know what happens after that. So
no.
How did Hagrid make this happen?
I mean, if the two are laying, they produce eggs, I think, yeah, the breeding is magical, and it's having the two eggs and doing a magical thing with the two eggs to have this creature. So I picture, yeah, like, you know, genetic manipulation with two embryos, I don't know. So that's how I picture it, because that's more the scientific way to look at it. But yeah.
So Hagrid can't pass an OWL, but he can genetically crossbreed. Like, he can do magical IVF.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised by it, because he can do magic. It's just that he's not allowed to. So I can picture that. And he's a mad scientist with animals. That's not allowed to do what he's doing with manticores and firecrab. So
very true. And Hagrid's the kind of person that would know a lot about the things. He's not a person who knows a little about everything. He's definitely the kind of person who knows a lot about a few things. So it just seems to me like very advanced magic to crossbreed two species, especially two very dangerous species.
even if he didn't do it himself, he's probably just like, you know what? I know a guy. He'll be at the Hogshead tonight.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Like, he would be the guy who would be financing the experiment, yeah. But then somebody with a little bit more practical experience in magic would be the one to carry it out. That makes sense.
Like, I've got this idea. I'll buy you a beer if you carry this out for me.
And the guy's like, yes, a beer. This is adequate compensation. Thank you.
Totally fair exchange for almost instant death, probably.
For sure. There are a couple of mentions of the Manticore in... there's a lot of them in the video game canon. Like, I won't go through every time it comes up in any of the Harry Potter and the fill-in-the-blank video games, but there are a few that I thought would be kind of fun to mention here. Like, if anybody... ever, like, if you're like me, then you missed out on playing the Hogwarts Mystery game, but apparently in one level, Bill Weasley teaches an extracurricular Defense Against the Dark Arts class one evening, and he actually brings in a manticore for the class.
How big is it?
I don't know. I mean, this one from the, it just kind of depends, I guess, because this one from the trailer doesn't look like something you would easily get into the castle.
I'm gonna Google it. Hang on. I gotta find...
Yeah, I'm Googling it too.
Yeah, Hogwarts Mystery.
Once again, student safety, not something they really consider too much at Hogwarts.
It's big! I mean, it's definitely not as big as the one that we see in the trailer, but it's like lion-sized. And it definitely has a dude's face. Hang on, I'm gonna post like this in the group chat.
A bearded dude with a... glorious lion hair, and yeah, interesting.
This manticore must go through conditioner like crazy, I'm just saying. Okay, not nearly as big as the one that we see. So I guess maybe it's a matter of interpretation how big this thing would actually be if you met one. Like, obviously the creators of Hogwarts Mystery felt it would be small enough you could fit it in a classroom, but the producers of Fantastic Beasts, Secrets of Dumbledore are thinking, no, that's not going to pop on screen. We need to make this thing into, like, one of the Godzilla-ish monsters. Like, this thing needs to look like it could destroy a small town, at least. And apparently it's quite easy to subdue the manticore in the Hogwarts Mystery game. Some people weren't too thrilled about that, but it doesn't seem to me like it was that complicated of a game anyway.
Yeah.
But the last one, this is my favorite. Of all the times it's mentioned in the games, this is my favorite use of the manticore. Apparently, this is from the Wizards Unite mobile game. At one point in the late 2010s, a British witch named Teresa Stott was found to have somehow raised a manticore called Mr. Whiskers from infancy. When the Ministry of Magic was notified of this manticore, they sent a magizoologist member of the Statute of Secrecy Task Force to retrieve it, which proved a, quote, remarkably ghastly affair.
I love Mr. Whiskers! What is the harm?
I would like to make a motion here and now that going forward we refer to the manticore in Secrets of Dumbledore as Mr. Whiskers. All those in favor?
Aye.
I think it's Mrs. Whiskers.
Okay, fine.
Okay,
maybe
fine.
Maybe Mrs.
Whiskers? Mrs. Whiskers. There is a motion on the floor that the manticore be called Mrs. Whiskers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Hi.
Aye. Motion passes. Henceforth, Speak Beastie will now refer to the manticore in Secrets of Dumbledore as Mrs. Whiskers. Motion passes.
Yay! And fun detail about, because I'm still stuck on the representation of the manticore in Hogwarts Mystery, it has blue eyes, and actually it fits the antique description that I read when I did the quick research, that the description in the medieval history described the manticore having blue eyes, so that's really cool.
Oh, that's wild!
Oh, I bet they're pretty.
So I can't wait to see Mrs. Whiskers' blue
Whiskers.
Eyes.
Yes.
Striking blue eyes.
All right, so that wraps up this episode, and whew, what an episode it was.
No kidding.
So for our podcast question this week, inspired by Albert, We would like to ask you, our listeners, are there any inspiring examples of positivity from the wizarding community that you've witnessed and have a story about? And Jeff had this excellent idea of putting together a chicken soup for the Speak Beastie Soul, whether that's an episode or something we do on Patreon or what have you. But it would be really wonderful to collect these positive stories. I know they're out there. So definitely send those in. We would love to hear from you. So drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
While you are leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, since you're already on the internet, you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. You can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. And I don't know how many details I'm at liberty to announce, but I can promise you we have some really cool swag coming out for our patrons within the next couple of months. One of the things that I will say is that one of our incredible graphic designers, Elizabeth, made these amazing computer backgrounds for each of the characters. Like the one for Queenie, I've set it as my wallpaper on my own laptop. It is very cool. Keep an eye out for those during the at least one or two of those during the month of March, and we'll be releasing more. And then there's also some physical stuff coming out. It's a good time to be a patron. So patreon.com/speakbeastie. Do y'all have anything planned coming up?
One thing I would add is the full interview with Joshua Shea, the video of that will be up on the Patreon by the time this episode comes out. So if you aren't already a Patreon supporter and you want to see that video interview that Jeff and Marjo did with Joshua Shea, who plays young Newt Scamander, that's from episode 145. You can find that video on Patreon, and it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, you need to see that just if you need a reason. The way that he described with his hand how it worked with the little picket, the scene with the botricle, it's just adorable.
Oh, it's precious. And if anybody does watch that video, I would like to add a disclaimer that I participated in that interview at 6 a.m. after working all night, and we kept the cameras on so that we could communicate better with Joshua, but I had no idea at the time that that video would ever be released into the wild. So if there is anything at all off-putting about my appearance, I apologize.
There is nothing wrong with your appearance.
You look fine. You all looked wonderful.
Speaking of Patreon things, I have the other two. I know that Anne, you were there. Marsha, you were there. Amy, you were not there, but you would be invited to come along when we revisit this. But in the past, we have delved into this epic fan fiction called The New Adventures of Newt Scamander. You may recall we did that.
Oh, that's finished now, right?
You what?
It's finished now, right? Like, it's
done? It is, but we did it. We broke it up into three parts, and that was 57 chapters, and we still weren't done. We took it as far as it was, and then this author, who calls themselves the Parody Master, finally went back and did the last three chapters, and now it's done. And I'm determined, because at heart I am a completionist, that we must at some point soon go back in and finish the last three chapters.
Oh, absolutely. Let's try and get that done before the movie comes out.
We got to see where it's going. Like, we got to finish it.
I want a final musical moment from Credence.
Where he just sings My Immortal, and it's so good.
Oh, so good. And Anne, our by this time that we're recording this, our discussion of the connections between the Newt Squad and the Avengers has come out.
Yes.
I listened to it this morning. It was so good.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it.
I'm glad you liked it, too. We were especially like, we had no idea when we sat down to do that, just how we surprised ourselves with how many connections there were. Like, we were very, yes, very pleased with how that turned
some
out.
Some blown my mind, totally.
Yeah, really, I think this nice. Is that'll be a really fun thing to revisit once Crimes of Grindelwald is out and once Doctor Strange is out. I think that'll be a really fun thing to revisit to see what kind of playground we have now.
Did you mean Secrets of Dumbledore? You said Crimes of Grindelwald.
God bless it. Yes, I did.
Every time you say God bless it, I'm about to say Anne, because I think you're going to say something else.
No, I'm not going to give Catherine more work. Oh, let's gosh. Wrap this up. I need to not talk anymore.
All right. Well, that concludes that episode. What a trip it was. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Marjolaine. Case closed.